Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hey girl, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Nothing. Don't you look adorable today?
Oh, thank you. I'm sporting my new look today. I've got to go live. I've got sales going on. I'm running an opportunity chat. Just had a girl promote. I'm over here just freaking killing it at Park Lane.
I love it. Tell me about that ring you're wearing. I notice that ring whenever you're playing with it. I love that.
So this is called the Reese ring, and it is a matte gold, and I love how it's circular. And as you can see, the CZ's right here on the side, and it's just, it's a great fall piece.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So, I really think it can almost transition into anything, really.
Right, exactly. Like, especially if you're wearing matte gold earrings, it would just work really well.
So tell me a little bit, because so you've gone from, everybody knows from our last episode, living in Florida to now homesteading in Arizona. What's also different about you is that you are now selling jewelry and for Park Lane, which then requires you to be a little more girly than you used to be, right?
Right, exactly. So you guys can find me on Facebook, guys. I am now what we call high fashion homesteader.
I love that.
So basically, I go in, I do these lives, I show all this jewelry, but I also talk about homesteading and how I can incorporate the two, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm out working on certain days, like I'm normally wearing studs or a dainty piece, you know, but if I'm going into town, I might wear a little bit of a bigger piece, that sort of thing. But I'm like, and if I can still wear jewelry while homesteading, like there's no reason nobody else shouldn't be wearing any jewelry because, you know, jewelry releases endorphins and builds your confidence and makes you feel better. And so there's no reason nobody should be wearing jewelry, even if it's not Park Lane.
Do you feel that now? Because now you've been selling jewelry for over a year, right?
Right.
Do you truly feel like that jewelry can change your emotion?
Yes. There is such a huge difference from the days where I don't get up and or not up, don't get dressed up and don't put the jewelry on to the days that I do. My productivity is more when I'm dressed up. I get more done. I feel better. I have more energy. So there really is a science behind it. I know it sounds kind of crazy, like what the hell is a pair of earrings gonna do, right? But it does make a difference.
I completely agree with that. I'll say all the time, like if I leave the house without earrings on, like, oh my God, I'm naked. And I do feel like that. I do also feel like a lot of times people will say, oh, I don't care what I wear. I don't care. People put in too much effort. It doesn't take a ton of effort just to feel good about yourself. And a great pair of earrings or feeling like you're put together, even if you're doing the most mundane thing like grocery shopping, just feels good.
Or just picking up those kids from school, right? Like in the school line, just throw on a pair of earrings. Look, I have a fashion formula, guys, on my website that it's three steps. It gets you out of the house super quick. You are dressed to impress and you're feeling good about yourself.
So how do you do that and slaughter pigs at the same time, little Miss Tabby? Since you last spoke to us in our first episode, by the way, which everybody loved. Thank you, everybody.
Yay! Thank you, guys. Woohoo!
We missed you as much as you've missed us. We've been happy to hear all the feedback. Glad everybody loved that first episode, and Charlene didn't have to correct us on anything. So,
yay!
So far, our vocabulary is working.
That's because we're getting older and more mature. No.
Or we just haven't done it yet.
We haven't fucked up yet.
Right. So tell me about the pig. You guys had to slaughter a pig, or you chose to slaughter a pig. This was the first one.
Yes, so this was our first pig. We chose to slaughter it. Because we wanted pork in the freezer, right? So Dion had found this couple that lives off-grid as well. They're homesteaders. And there's a community. So they came over and they taught us how to butcher a pig. Let me rephrase that. They really taught Dion how to butcher a pig, okay? I was kind of in and out. I was observing. I was watching. And then I had to go take care of something for Park Lane. I went over here, right? And then I came back. And that's kind of how I juggle it all, is time management, really. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so they came over. I did not watch the killing process. Oh, guys, FYI, if you are very sensitive, animal lover, can't handle the grody stuff, by all means, please, please, please turn this off and join us on the next episode, because it's about to get real in here, okay?
Or maybe just don't. Maybe just back out now and yes. make better choices in your life, because God only knows which direction this conversation is going to go in.
This is true. So it could either be really, really great, or you could be sobbing in your bathroom. I don't know.
So where did you meet the slaughtering couple that's now going to teach Dion how to slaughter? They are homesteaders uh-huh. in your area as well?
Well, yes. So we met them online. Technically, they're in our area. Notice I put air quotes. It still took us 2 hours to get to them.
Oh, so you brought the pig with you.
No. They came to us. I'm sorry. Oh. I'm jumping stories. 2 hours for them to come to us.
Okay. So now they're there on your property, and you are going to slaughter this 300-pound pig.
Pretty much. So Dion and the guy go down into the pit. Me and the girl are down there, but we kind of went behind a tree uh-huh. and, like, plugged our ears, right? Because, well, Dion's shooting them with the AR, and the gun's very loud, okay? Uh-huh. So, all right, guys, here we go. So, the first shot goes off. Well, the pig literally dodged a bullet. It had a hole in its ear. So we missed the first shot. He goes back. He tries again. There's a second shot. And then at that point, he's hit the pig, but it hasn't fully. And they warned me. They go, after you shoot it, it's going to, like,
someone
shake.
At
Who's at your front door?
I don't know. UPS. Don't worry. Keep going.
Okay. So he shot the pig, and it wasn't quite fully dead yet, and I could see through the trees its legs, like, kicking, kind of like a chicken running with its head cut off.
Right.
Very, very similar. So, yeah, that was a little weird. That part was kind of weird, but so
the
because
squeal
of
squeal sound, too, right? I imagine, they're squealing. And are there other pigs around?
Mm-hmm. The whole pack's right there.
So are they squealing as well?
No, just the one.
Okay.
The one that got hurt and the one that got killed squealed. That was it. And I was like, I said to the lady, I go, holy shit, he missed the first one. There's no way those pigs are going to come back to them to set it up again. She's like, oh, girl, they'll be back in 5 minutes looking for food, loving on you. Like, nothing happened. And she wasn't kidding. Like, I swear to God, after we literally killed one of their sisters and babies, and they still came right up to us. I'm like, y'all are, for being the most intelligent animals, y'all are dumb as shit.
For real. They'll do anything for a little bit of corn.
Yeah. So
now you shoot it, right? It's
yep.
dead.
Yeah. Now we got to get it up the hill to the slaughtering area.
Oh, Lord.
So the pig is not where we wanted it to be, dead. So Dion and this guy have to drag 300 pounds of literally dead weight, probably 20 feet, maybe 30 feet, not terribly far, but again, it's so, so heavy. Then they rolled it over onto the forks of the tractor, lofted it up, and then drove up the hill to the top area where the slaughtering process happened.
Okay, and now take us back. The reason these people are here homesteading or teaching you how to do this is because they want you to, you're going to trade Z's with the tractor with them, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So, and that will lead into the next story as well.
Okay, got it.
So, because we offered them pork, we're like, hey, do you want, we'll share the pig with you or whatever. And they're like, no, we have so much canned pork, it's ridiculous, right?
Right.
So, but then Dion's like, well, I have a tractor. Do you need any tractor work? And they're like, now we're talking, right?
Okay.
So,
right.
Because it's a big thing to be able to dig out here. Not a lot of homesteaders have a tractor. It's kind of a high commodity out here. And so we traded the work. So we bring the pig up. We they put this bar in between its back legs to keep its legs spread open. So that way the body doesn't fall on itself, I guess, right. Would be the best way.
Yeah, so that if you guys are, like, thinking about the way that your poor dogs lay on its back, right, when they're itching themselves, you want the legs and arms to be open so that their belly is open
fully,
to you, right?
Yes.
So now you basically have this pig hanging from a tractor, bar in between its legs, and crucified like Jesus Christ.
I wouldn't go that far, but yes. So we get him up there, and apparently the pig is much bigger than they were expecting, because normally you hang the pig ass end up, okay? Uh-huh. You have to sever the head off first, okay? The head comes off, y'all. Like, you saw the head off. I just don't know how else to explain that. You know what I mean? And It's a sight. It's quite an interesting sight. You know what I mean? And then, normally, then you ream their asshole. Now, that puts a new meaning to it.
What is that?
That is literally where you cut the skin around the asshole, and you're practically taking most of the ass off, like the asshole off. There's a special way you have to do it. Because if you cut it incorrectly, you can release the contaminants into your meat and ruin the whole pig.
That's why I was going to ask if that was the next step. Is it because of a safety issue then, really?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, and then you're getting the colon and all that stuff out.
Yes, I think part of that procedure I had to go somewhere. So when I came back, you normally keep it hanging when you cut it to remove the guts and all of that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, this pig was too big, so we had to lay it down and do it. And so as they're cutting the center of the pig, she's literally trying to scoop back all the internal organs while Dion's slicing through. And it's hard because it's kind of like putting water in a strainer. You can't keep any water in because
it keeps falling back on each other. Like, I can just imagine it's a big mess. I'm kind of picturing The Walking Dead in my mind, like when they start cutting out the guts of some of the people and, like, putting it on themselves. But it just becomes a big mess inside the gut area.
Right. And so that's why it normally is supposed to hang, because you cut and it all just falls out. It goes
right. Poof.
We didn't have the, we had the, you know, and so you cut it in half. You had to remove all the skin. And then once you have this carcass, then you cut it up into big pieces. She showed him where the ribs, the loins, and all of that. And then by the end of it literally took us all day. Oh my God, Sabrina, it took us all day. To butcher this one pig, we ended up with, I want to say, 300 pounds close of food.
Jesus, yeah.
Off of that, and she left it all with us in a big ass cooler, like one of those huge Yeti coolers. Mm-hmm. So we filled that up with the meat. We gave her the carcass. We gave her the guts. We gave her the head, because all of that stuff she will boil up and feed to her dogs. And we would have kept it. I was like, but I just have nowhere to put it.
Right.
You know? So she took it from us, which was very, very helpful. And then the next day, we went and took those pieces and then butchered them to the appropriate sizes. So the ribs, we ended up with a lot of roast because we're brand new. So we didn't get any hams. You know what I mean? We got roast, we got sausage meat, we got ribs. I mean, we got a whole bunch of pork in there. I got all this gorgeous lard. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what, that's the prettiest part, is the fat that comes off this pig. It's like 2 to 3 inches thick, pure white, absolutely beautiful. And what you do is you render that down and then you can it. So there's no more going olive oil, avocado oil, vegetable, canola. This replaces all of that. You take a little, you melt it down, put it on your pastry instead of an egg wash. Oh my God.
That sounds delicious.
Yes.
So now what do you do with all that meat? Because your refrigerator is currently in the RV, right? And your freezer, where are you storing all this meat?
So we have the RV refrigerator. We have a regular size refrigerator in Pam's house. And our stand-up freezer that we had in DeLand is hooked up. So it's it's all in the DeLand the big stand-up freezer right now. And then we've got sausage to make that will turn around and freeze. Like I said, I'll can the lard. And if we need more room, I'll take... Dion's going to make a big pulled pork, right? And I'll take most of that and I'll turn around and I'll recan it and put it in the shelves and that sort of stuff and save it that way, because when you can, it's good for at least 2 to 3 years.
So you guys would prefer to can over freeze now, is that right?
I would prefer to can because it's more durable. I think some other people are a little hesitant because canning meat always is like, oh my God, it's so scary. It's like, no, it's not.
Right. What's the fear? Is the flavor, something happens to the flavor or the texture or what?
No, I mean, there's a lot. Look, canning food in general is, if you don't do it right, you can get sick. You can get botulism, right?
Oh, shit.
It's no joke,
Right.
Yeah, it's no joke. So when you can something, meat has to be canned in a pressure canner, right? And, you know, there's other things you can do in a water bath. And then you always have to test your jar, right, to make sure that the lid is still sealed. You still have to hear the swoosh when you open so you know it's been sealed. And then you have to visually inspect your food, right? You have to smell and look at it.
Right.
That is very scary for some people because if you've ever had botulism, you don't ever want it again. It is like you're throwing
up. What is it?
So it's basically a bad bacteria that's gotten into your system and it's making you violently ill. You'll puke for like 3 days.
Jesus. Yeah, you don't want that.
No. You don't want that. But if you're taking the right precautions and you're being safe about it, there's no problem with canning your meat.
Mm-hmm. So now that you guys have done it, when are you doing the next one?
So we sold... We're not.
That's what I was getting at.
No. So like... Shit, no. We literally... We had 4 other pigs after that. That Dan was like, oh, we're going to butcher all these... No, we sold those 4. So now we only have the 2 mamas down there, and we're going to re-inseminate them, pregnate them, and then sell the babies. And then we'll probably just keep 1 a year for us to butcher. Mm-hmm. And then that'll be our meat source or our pork source for the year.
Was it just too much?
It was so much work.
Yeah,
it was
so much work.
And when I'm saying a whole day, guys, I'm talking 10-hour days. So it literally took us 20 hours, okay, to do all of this. And while that doesn't sound really a lot in comparison, it is a lot when you're still trying to build other things and get other things done. And, you know, you're not used to that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
So, you know, that part's a little hard. So... We'll probably do it once a year and use it to stock the year supply.
Did you have to let the pig bleed out similar to... Our boys have gone hog hunting before. And when they went hog hunting, they came back that night and I woke up the next morning and there were 2 big coolers out on the back porch and it was wrapped in rope. And I was like, what the hell is in there? And they said that the 2 hogs were in there. They had quartered them up. Mm-hmm. And so they were basically just like body parts laying on top of each other. The plug of the cooler was unplugged, and they just kept putting ice on the top because the idea was they had to bleed these hogs out for 7 days. So I don't know if it's because they're wild hogs compared to, so that the gaminess, I think, comes out of it. Compared to your farm, where these are not wild hogs, the adrenaline's not running through them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's right or not.
It probably is, because, like I said, we didn't have to... I mean, it bled out, mm-hmm. but I don't remember, like, a whole bunch of blood coming out. And again, I was in and out, so it may have happened, and I wasn't there. Because by the time they started cutting, there was no more blood. It wasn't bleeding out. You know what I mean?
Got it. Yeah. And so what about on, like, sausage? Did you guys make breakfast sausage, like, grind up the meat?
We will. So it's all in chunks right now, and we have to pull
out. So there's still, a whole lot more work to do. Yeah, that's too much work.
Yeah, we still have to ground up the sausage. We can't get our hands on sausage casings, so we can't make the links. So right now it's got to be sausage patties. I have to render down the fat and can it. And rendering, it's not a terrible hard process. You put all the fat in there. You cook it down. Then you let it, and then you strain it, then you let it cool, and then you do that two or three times to get the impurities out, and then you have to can it. That can take a couple hours on itself, so it's just a lot of work, you know?
Yeah. And I imagine we've done it with deer, the meat process of turning deer into summer sausage and breakfast sausage, and like Randy and Ethan, when Ethan had killed one of his first deer, Randy sent Ethan home with the deer, and then the next day or 1 or 2 days later, again, the deer sat on ice for a little while, and then Randy came with his grinder and with the sausage casings, and different than a pig, because a deer has less fat, we actually had to go pick up pork and grind the pork into the breakfast sausage, because you have to add a little bit more fat. If not, you're just eating basically ground turkey, which is not delicious, right?
No, exactly,
But even that process had taken an entire day of carving the meat off of the legs. And then here's Ethan. He goes, and you've been in our backyard. Everybody that has listened knows that we live on the water. Ethan chucks an entire deer leg out into the marsh in the middle of the night, because we're like 10 hours into this, right? And he's like, I'm not really sure if it made it all the way into the marsh. Now, you have to imagine that because we live in Florida and what these boys do back there, every morning I think I'm going to wake up with a gator in my backyard thinking, this is no longer your meat. This is my meat, and I'm going to take it from you. So I walk into the backyard the next day, and there are 10 vultures sitting out there.
Really? Yeah, because you have raw meat. That's what's going to happen.
Right. They're just staring at me. And you know how I feel about birds. And immediately I went inside and woke Ethan up, and I was like, go out in that marsh and find that leg and toss it in the water. Oh, my God.
Right? That was what we were concerned about, too, because when we were done, I was like, well, we've got blood on the ground. I was like, well, what do we do? I don't want to draw in any predators.
Right.
And so she's like, just pour a little bleach over it. You'll be fine. And then we had to take that night all the meat that was in the cooler. We had to ratchet strap it tight, kind of like the rope, right?
Right.
And then we had to lock it in the Connex because coyotes and whatever else we have out here would come and get it, you know, because we don't have outdoor dogs that protect the property. I mean, Maverick and Phoenix protect the property, but not to that extent. Like, they're not outdoor dog. Yeah.
So now you've got your pig.
Yes.
And for any of our fans that are super sensitive, so Tabby murdered a pig, but she also rescued a goat.
I did. And just so you guys know, that pig was fucking delicious. We had pork chops that night. I had apple and onion pork chops with some homemade applesauce. Damn, it was so yummy.
Good for you.
Yes. And when we ate that rib, girl, it was like literally that fucking long. I'm like, rah, rah, rah.
Like a T-Rex. Like a damn dinosaur bone.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
If people get sensitive about their food, grow up already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're 40-something years old. You know that a pig comes from a pig. And all that meat comes from somewhere. Grow up.
Right? Did you see, I don't know if you're on TikTok, but you see that one, the boy is all sad because the mom explains to him what the market means. This little piggy going to, because you think of him going to, a grocery store and buying food, and you don't, and he's in overalls, right? You don't think of him going to get slaughtered.
Well, most little boys grow up in those overalls and tractors and think about becoming little farmers. And those animals are all there for a purpose.
Exactly.
They're not pets.
No, they're not. We love our animals. We treat them amazingly, but they're not pets. They have a purpose. Our chickens have a purpose. Our rabbits have a purpose.
What about little panda?
So panda's a breeding rabbit. Okay. She still has a purpose.
She is there for effing and not for eating.
Exactly. Yep. You'll not be getting her fur.
Right. So how did you end up saving a goat?
Okay. Literally, it was a goat rodeo. So we went to their house, the neighbor of the homesteaders, right? Which ended up, they live 2 hours away, which is weird because mile-wise, it's really not that far. It's just because they're so back up in the mountain.
And there's probably just not a ton of different alternative ways to get there, right? There's not a lot of roads cut into the mountain.
Right. It's kind of like we're here and they're here, but you have to go
around your elbow to get to your ass.
Pretty much, because there's no straight way. So we get there, and we're there to help them build an underground greenhouse. Mm-hmm. And we start digging. She invited another couple that lives nearby, because they're like, oh, you guys are going to love them, introducing us, da-da-da-da. So she comes over. It's her two kids, the husband's there. So the women end up going over to this other house where we're going to cook dinner and get things prepared while the guys are building the greenhouse, right? Well, so the younger girl just stops. She's like, oh, I got to go check on my goat. So she drives to this field, middle of fucking nowhere, just drives to this field. We walk out onto this cliff, and there's, as she so nicely calls it, Blue, is a male goat, and he's got these horns, okay? He's got these little fucking beady eyes. I don't like goats. So I'm standing on top of a cliff with a goat. I'm going, well, this is not going to work out very well, right? Now, he was very friendly and nice or whatever, but it didn't matter because all I saw was the 200-foot cliff on my other side, right?
Right.
So all I see is this cartoon of a goat going, bam, right?
Right, yeah, that's scary, trusting a goat.
Yes, trusting a goat. So luckily, he was actually a pretty good goat, no issues. Well, she found her other goat, the female. It was down that cliff, stuck in a rock. So I'm
down
going...
Down 200 feet?
About, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So she found a way down, jumped her happy ass down there with the goat now, okay? Trying to push a rock off the goat. She can't do it. Now, Danielle, the original lady that I met, she's not of the physical abilities to do anything like this. Mm-hmm. My ass is just not going down there, right? Just straight up, it's not.
Right, you're like, it's not happening.
So I looked at, I was like, so hey, just so you know, you stay there. Danielle's going to drive me back. I'm taking your truck along with your two children, and we're going to go get the guys. And she's like, okay, no problem. No problem whatsoever. I literally could have stolen her kids and truck. And she's like, okay. Right? She hasn't met me for more than 5 minutes.
So you take her car and her children.
Yes. and the other friend, the mutual friend.
She's down on a cliff.
With a goat. Yes.
And this is the predicament you've now gotten yourself into.
It is.
This is your one and only friend at this point on the side of the mountain. You don't want to lose her. You don't want to get stuck with her fucking kids.
So, I take the car. Danielle's driving me back to the place because I have no fucking idea where I am. Cell service isn't working, right? I can't get a hold of anybody because I tried calling the guys, but obviously it didn't work. So, we drive back. I'm hauling ass, honking on the horn as we're getting close by, like full-on emergency. I ran up the truck all the way up to where they are. I'm like, you, get in a truck. Let's go. And they're like, what? I said, no. Get your ass in a truck. The one guy goes, what the hell? I said, your wife is on the side of a mountain with a goat. Let's go. I'm not fucking around.
Let's go, people. Let's go. This is game time.
Right? And he's like, oh, my God. Where are my kids? I got your kids. Get in a truck. Let's go. Dan, off the tractor. Unhook the trailer. Let's go. So I round, and there was even some strange guys that I didn't even know that were there. And I was like, you, get in a truck. Let's go. Like... It was a no fucking around moment, right?
I can imagine your intensity at that moment, too, because I've seen you serious. And it doesn't get any more serious than a person on the side of a fucking mountain with a goat.
Right, yeah. Because when I get serious, there's no fucking around. Right. There's no arguing with me.
Right.
Get your ass in gear. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, yeah. How do you guys save the lady?
So she was able to... The husband was like, she got down here. And we were like, yep. He's like, son of a bitch. Because he didn't want to have to get down there. So he gets down there. A couple other guys go down there. Dion finally goes down there. She comes back up. They're finally able to move the rock. Now, they think it was pregnant. They don't know if they had it. They lost a baby. So it was a lot of weird stuff going on. So she was oozing. They didn't know if her leg was broken. They didn't know if she had a miscarriage.
We're talking about the goat, not the woman, right?
Oh, yes, the goat. Let me clarify that.
It's like, Jesus, what was coming out of her?
Right, so they thought she was pregnant, so they didn't know if she was going into labor or if she was having a miscarriage. They couldn't tell if the goat was still in the belly. Like, it was all this craziness. So, all these guys go down there. They're trying to get her. The goat's not walking. Mm-hmm. They had suggested to get Dion's tractor to try to go down a different way. Not able to get the tractor down there, thank God. And then they finally had this cart, like a wagon, like an industrial-sized wagon. So they took it down there, put the goat in it, and it took like six people, and they started moving it up this mountain. Mm-hmm. By hand. So I was like, holy shit. So in the meantime, this literally took all day long to rescue this goat.
I bet.
So I stayed up on the top. Like I said, I'm not going down there. I was watching, I was talking, I was taking care of her kids, you know, making sure everybody's, you know, still pretty much okay. And then, of course, there were moments when Blue started fucking with me.
Oh, because there's still goats up at the top of the mountain, too.
Just Blue. Just Blue.
Okay.
Because he won't leave his girl. She's still alive. Yeah. So
and possible baby mama.
Exactly. So as long as she's alive, he's not leaving.
I didn't know they rolled like that. I didn't know they were that loyal.
But she dies. He's moving on to the next one.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. So, I remember I was sitting on a rock and I looked up and there was fucking Blue coming over my head. I'm like, are you out of your damn mind, Blue? What the fuck are you doing? Freaking me out.
Stand down, Blue. Stand down. Stand
Danielle's down. Laughing her ass off like, oh my God, right? And then, oh, and another time, he was trying to get by me. and there was a cliff in front of me. Now, there was probably, you know, there was a good gap between me and the cliff. But this goat comes in and pushes me to the side a little bit. That's freaked me the fuck out. And he's just like, da-da-da-da-da. Like, again, but I said he was very friendly. He'd come up and want you to pet him and rub him.
Yeah, but
and...
I understand the angst behind a wild animal of sorts mm-hmm. and a cliff.
Yeah.
Where if there's any sudden movements and then I react, I'm not dying for your ass, Blue. And that's, right. you're now a safety issue to me. So I don't think I'm yeah. petting Blue. People would think I'm an asshole. I'm not petting Blue on the side of the mountain.
Well, see, I was like, y'all, I am not familiar with goats, not very comfortable. I just let everybody know right up front. And Blue, of course, fucked with me. But you have to, like, hold your shit together when you're around an animal like that because it'll smell your fucking fear and take advantage of it. They will. Fucking dirty little bastards they are. There was another time I was sitting here. Blue was way the fuck over here laying down, okay? Apparently, it was either Dion or someone was coming up the fucking mountain, scared Blue. He starts, like, trotting towards me, and I'm like, whoa, no, you slow your ass down, because you are not pushing me off the side of this fucking mountain.
Yeah, and he kind of looked like goat.
Yeah, so I was just like, what in the hell?
So,
I was like, whew.
Another crazy weekend, crazy day at Tabby's house.
Yes. So they took the goats back to their house. And see, here the thing is, they free range all their goats, right? So when I went over to their house, they had like shit ton of goats just walking around. I'm like, oh, hell no. Nope. Mm-mm. Chickens are running around. Goats are running around. Dogs are running around. I'm like, oh, no. So we got over there with the goat that we rescued. All the guys are there, blah, blah, blah. Blue comes over, and I don't know what happened, but he fucking rammed his head into a dog against the metal trailer. Like,
what is and wrong I mean, if, with that goat?
And of course the dog bit him underneath, right? But I'm like, that's why I don't like goats. Those motherfuckers are crazy. You don't know when they're gonna flip.
Yeah, I wouldn't be down. Mm-mm. I wouldn't be down with being friends with goats. So, well, no. I'm glad you didn't lose the goat, and I'm glad you didn't lose your new homesteading friend. Future hangouts with them? Are you guys gonna be hanging yeah. out with them?
Yes. So we will be hanging out with them. They are really nice people, really loyal. Like, the whole time, the couple that we were helping with the goat kept telling the couple that we were supposed to be there helping was like, go on, we got this, it's okay. And of course, Daniel's response to them is, fuck you. And I'm like, that is so us.
Right.
So we're like, so yeah, we'll probably hang out with them more. We were supposed to go out there yesterday on Sunday, but we had too high of winds. And you're not taking the tractor with
that
the big
sense.
Wings. Yeah.
That makes sense. So, Nate and I traveled this past weekend to somewhere uh-huh. where you're not, I don't know if you're very familiar with, but I know you had a trip to Tennessee, but you were up mm-hmm. in the mountains and I was up in Nashville. Have you been in Nashville, Tennessee
yeah.
before?
Yeah.
I didn't care for it. I'm going to be honest.
No?
No.
Why?
So listen, a couple months ago,
because it's like this fucking big.
Well, it is. The highlight of Nashville is this fucking big, which Tabby is mm-hmm. lifting up about 2 inches, similar to the block size of where all these bars are, right? But
right.
We booked a trip to Nashville because Allegiant was flying there. It was like $200 for the both of us to go
okay.
both ways. So why not, right? For a weekend getaway. We got there on Thursday, go down to Broadway where they tell us this is the place to go. We really don't have any major plans. Figured that this block of Broadway would be enough to keep us busy for a weekend.
How'd that work out?
I was over it 2 bars in.
Yep.
So this is the thing. It is not an entire block of bars. And what I was expecting was maybe a little more like New Orleans, maybe a little more like Las Vegas, where it was a mixture of bars and souvenir shops and restaurants and this and this and this. And that's not what it is. It is two solid blocks of bars. And for my friends that are in Virginia Beach, let's say like Atlantic, like the strip down in Virginia Beach where it's like Hammerheads and three bars, just expand that by maybe 12 bars on each side. Cars driving back and forth. The police block it off. There are bachelorette parties and drunken people everywhere. And listen, it's not that I struggle with this thing of, because I don't drink, I don't want to be judgy about it. But there's also comes a time, I think, that I'm just good on it now.
Right.
Like, I just don't need to be in a place that is consistently just drinking. And when I went into it, I was thinking, I can do this because it's Nashville and I love music. And my understanding of Nashville prior to this weekend was that Nashville was the home of country music. It held the integrity of what country music was.
No.
It was not that. It was bullshit. It was every single bar was, can't stop, believe it, hold on to that feeling, over and over and over and over and over again.
And over. So it was nothing but Journey.
Yeah, it was nothing but pop music of some, or old rock and roll music to keep the bar popping. And right. not about the quality and integrity of the music. And so then I was like, well then, if I don't drink, and my husband barely drinks, what are we doing here? And this is what we're going to do the next 3 days.
So what did you guys end up doing?
So, well, the next morning we woke up, and we went to the Country Music Hall of Fame. So that was pretty cool. We walked through it for a couple hours. And the whole time kind of like chit-chatting with each other, talking about the little facts that we're learning, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we leave and we went back down to Broadway and we're there for about a couple hours. And that's when I looked at him and said, are you having fun? And he was like, yeah, I'm having fun. And I was like, well, what was more fun to you this morning when we did the museum and we chit-chatted, or this, where we've been sitting quiet for 2 hours? We ate a shitty thing of onion ring or curly fries. Yeah. Because you feel obligated to order something, right? Because you're sitting at the bar waiting, and I'm not drinking.
Right.
And I said, what did you have more fun doing? And he was like, well, this morning. And I said, so why are we here? Why are we doing this? And I said, are you good with going back to our hotel? I think it was like 6 o'clock. So technically, we're supposed to go back, shower, get dressed, come back out, and go to the bars until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, do you just want to shower, order in, grab a deck of cards from the convenience store across the street, and let's play strip poker, or let's do something. Like, grab some beers, and let's watch ridiculousness in our hotel room. And he was like, are you sure? I want you to have fun. And I said, do you want me to have fun, or do you want me to be right here in Nashville?
Yeah. Because
this is not fun.
Right. Yeah.
And he was like, no, if that's what you want to do. And let me tell you, from that moment on, it was the best time ever. Because we just did what we wanted to do. We popped back into Broadway every couple of times. Like, we did it Saturday night, right at the peak. Sat at one bar, sat in the mix of it rather than on the fringe. Just got in there, sang, danced, and then got the hell home. The next morning, like, we went to, I found a museum about 15 minutes outside of Nashville, an old car museum for a car company that nobody's ever heard. It was only in business for 3 years. It's the only thing this town has about it. I've actually forgotten the name of the car company. It was it was so unimpressive, but it was just fun. Nobody was wearing cowboy boots. Because let me tell you, only the people in Nashville wearing cowboy boots are the people dressing up in costume because they think that that's what they're supposed to be wearing.
Is not what Tennessee people wear.
No. Like, when you go outside the fringes, they actually, on the outside of Nashville fringes, because we ended up at like a local county fair shopping at somebody's like a farmer's market.
Okay, cool.
They were all hippies. All kind of of weird kind of retro hippie recycled bags, a younger group, but they were not in cowboy boots or glittered bottoms, and they weren't actually listening to country music.
No. No, everybody has this image of Tennessee is like, it's all of this country boy, redneck kind of vibe, and it really isn't. It's only the tourists that are coming in, buying the boots from the one store in Nashville to buy the boots at,
right?
And they're walking around thinking they're hot shit. I remember when I went, because I've been to Tennessee a couple times. I went one time to Nashville with a girls' trip, and I looked at all these blonde, no offense, blonde bimbos running around in these short skirts and cowboy boots and frilly tops, and I'm going, you wouldn't be wearing that shit at home. And I'm like, people from around here don't wear that shit because, and I know because I'm only a couple, I grew up only a couple states away, like, you know, from Virginia, so... Right. People over there don't wear that kind of stuff. And it's just crazy. So what did you, so, I mean, did you go to the Grand Opry? Because that's kind of cool.
So we did not end up going to the Grand Ole Opry. So one of the places where the Grand Ole Opry originally started was called Ryman Theater, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a concert going on there that was about $150 a ticket, but it was from somebody I didn't know. And I was like, I'm good on that. But so the only museum that we went to inside Nashville was the Country Music Hall of Fame. Which I had just done the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, so I just kind of wanted to check it off the box. And it was nice to go around and listen to the music and all of that. What my favorite part was Thursday evening. So we went Thursday to Sunday. Thursday evening, my husband just stopped talking. And you know the way he is sometimes. Either he's talkative or he's not.
Right.
And I'm a talkative person, and it is a constant argument of ours of, well, you don't talk enough for me. Like, you're not communicating with me. I'm trying to pull teeth here. And so then once I started to see that happening, I downloaded a list. I went to Google and Googled, like, a list of interesting questions.
Right.
And so then what my game became for the rest of the weekend is I started working these questions in to our conversation, because he was leaving it up to me to talk the entire weekend. He was extremely tired for some reason, and I could have either, one, just bitched and yelled at him and been like, why aren't you talking to me and blah, 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 or I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make this my project. So I downloaded these questions of, like, what was the most ridiculous way you've ever injured yourself? did you ever have a teacher at school that did something really crazy or out of character? And then the fun was, I didn't want to just ask these questions. You have to ask them in a way that will be a conversation starter.
Right.
He had no idea, Tabby.
Really?
No idea. Until Sunday when I finally said something about, hold on a second, I forgot which question I was going to ask. And he goes, have you been looking up questions? And I was like, yeah, all weekend. And he was like, he just had zero idea.
Right.
But he enjoyed it because it was just a way to keep him talking and also to make me happy.
Right, exactly. I kind of understand Nate on that one, because you know me. If I don't want to talk, I don't want to talk. I'll shut down too.
Right.
I always say that Nate and I are more alike, and you and Dion are more alike.
It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah.
And it was just a good way of one of those moments of you can either choose to fight about it or you can choose to adapt and figure it out.
Right, exactly. And you adapted and figured it out.
Right. So, but I think overall, I'm good on Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee.
Well, at least Nashville. Like, I'm good on Nashville.
Yeah, there's not terribly, unless you're doing a super outdoors trip, right? So, also in Tennessee, when I went, not only did we go to Nashville, but I think it was Pigeon Forge. So I went whitewater rafting there. I went zip lining there. That was kind of cool. We stayed in a cabin. But Nashville is so just blah.
Our Uber driver called it Nash Vegas, which I agreed with. It was almost like, do you know, have you ever been to Ybor City?
Yes.
It reminds me of Ybor, where it's just kind of grody and gross and
yeah,
worse than New Orleans, because I think New Orleans has a bunch of cool stuff kind of stretched all along. The other thing is, like, Nashville's known for their fried chicken, right? And barbecue and all this other stuff. Well, not to be a bitch, but I live in the South, and we've got pretty good barbecue here. Also raised by, or I live with a Southern family and a Southern race family that my husband fries a pretty damn good grilled chicken or fried chicken.
Fried
and
chicken.
I don't eat a lot of fried food, so I didn't want to go there and get stuck eating a bunch of fried food just because people say it's the best. We had one, and I was like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, that, and look, you have to go to the right place for those things. So we went to, when me, Dion, and Pam went to Tennessee, we went up to that mountain for that crazy fucking adventure. Mm-hmm. We were driving back right on the border of Tennessee and what's below Tennessee? Georgia, I think? No, it can't be Georgia. I don't remember. But before you left Tennessee, there was this chicken fried place.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a whole big post on it on Facebook. I can't remember the name of it. But hot damn, that was true Southern cooking. Like, the chicken was fried properly. The fried tomatoes were done right. The mac and cheese was done right. They had real fucking potatoes, because you do not eat instant mashed potatoes in a Southern household.
No.
You will get your... No.
True
real
story.
Mashed potatoes and gravy. I didn't eat the collard greens because I don't eat collard greens, but it was good. Their baked beans were fucking on point. Coleslaw was good. I'm like, this is fucking Southern eating right here, bitches.
Right, that was,
yeah, but if that food doesn't make you go, this is the shit, you just toss it to the side.
Right, right. I agree. And you know what else I thought was interesting of just based on quality, right, is that I think people assume that the quality singers are right there on that Broadway, Nash, Vegas feeling, those couple blocks, right?
Right.
Where you want to work that 8 p.m. to 3 a.m. shift out on Broadway because that's when it's packed and everybody's playing there or everybody's out there. However, when we were at the airport yesterday, we were sitting at the hotel or the airport bar, which was Tootsie's, which is an original honky-tonk down at on Broadway.
Broadway.
But this is the airport version. There is a man in there singing, and he was singing acoustic versions of country songs, but outlaw country songs, or just different songs in his variation to it. And I looked at Nate, and I was like, this is the job to have. Most people would look at him and be like, ugh, you're the airport singer? The airport singer, you don't know who's walking through there.
No.
On a Friday night in downtown Nashville, you're singing to some drunk bachelorette who's saying,
that,
you know, play Whitney Houston! I love Journey!
Yeah, and you know those fucking producers are not in that bar.
Right.
Like, they're not there. It's crazy. But you never know when they're going to show up, because they're traveling from Nashville.
In the airport, right. Constantly, all the time, the record singers, this person, or the record producers, anybody that's coming out in and out of that, that's the job I would want. And I told Nate, I said, I hope that in the community of Nashville, which I seriously doubt, that people walk by and are like, oh, that's the airport singer. That's that guy that has that airport.
Right.
That should be the gig that you want to have.
Yeah, it should be. But, of course, nobody wants it. So he's like, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, genius. I hope that man becomes, and it was his birthday yesterday too, so I hope whatever his name was, he becomes somebody super famous. I also doubt that it really happens there.
No, a lot of what you get out of there, like, because Belmont is over there, which is one of the biggest musical schools in the country, you get a lot of people that come from Nashville because they study there and they kind of start their career there, but they're not from Nashville. They're from somewhere else, and they decided to take up the school because Colton got into Belmont, but Belmont was ridiculously expensive. Like, because it's a private school. It would have been over $100,000 a year.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Lot. It was expensive. So, but...
I want to bring up something. I know we were running out of some time here. We've been going for a little bit, but I've got a couple things that I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
First of all, is something that, and I've also gotten my kid's opinion and husband's opinion on this. So I want to talk about this because this is an article of that you sent me. You look scared, but you're well aware.
I am scared.
It's the video that you sent me from Fox News, which was a woman alleging that she was gang raped in the metaverse by 4 avatars. Now, she said that she was in the metaverse, so in a virtual reality, in her home, and 3 men came up and assaulted her verbally and by touching her avatar somehow, and the fourth person...
They couldn't touch. They couldn't, like, touch her or hold her down. They surrounded her and was verbally assaulting her as if they were raping her, like saying those kind of nasty things.
Well, the fourth one took pictures again in this metaverse. So, what do you think about that?
What the fuck? Like, okay, look, here's the deal, people. Virtual reality is not reality. One of the things that pissed me off on her whole thing was there was no stop button. Bitch, yes, there is. It's called get off the fucking computer.
Right.
That's what it is. You get off. Because she even said it in the interview. She was like, at the end, she's like, it just got so bad, I had to finally get off. I said, oh, so there was a stop method.
Right.
What the hell? You know, and look, what are you going to do about it? There's no laws or whatever. And if you want to start implementing laws in a virtual reality for something your avatar did to something else that is fake, then we have a big problem because, what is that video game? Oh my God, the really, really bad video game with the cars, the drive-bys, and the prostitutes, and the murders, and the robberies, and, I want to say GOT.
No.
I don't know what's... No, that's... What is it? Oh, my gosh. Okay, guys.
The drive-bys and the looting and...
The prostitutes.
It's in the inner... Like, it's always in a city somewhere.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck is that called?
Oh, my gosh.
Either way, but I get what you're saying. Like, so in that, you can loot people... You can
and that's virtual reality, and you're playing against somebody else, so what's the fucking difference?
Right.
A crime is a crime. But what also we found out in that interview that they wanted to make sure was very clear was that she's a competitor to Metaverse.
I thought that was a little sketchy.
So I'm like, yeah. Okay, and I get pissed off at this shit, okay? That was not rape. Quit calling rape because the women who have actually been raped didn't get a fucking choice. They didn't get to turn an off button. They were physically held down, okay? You are demeaning the true meaning of being raped. Fucking stop it.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't like
it. I mean, I'm like, I want to bitch slap her.
Yeah, so I'll tell you the results of me asking our kids. So...
Okay.
We were having a conversation about this. I asked my husband first, and my husband first said, you know, ooh, that's too bad. And I think a lot of that comes from just being pro-female, right? Of having a wife with a very strong personality where he was like, you know, that's unfortunate for her, but I'm not sure if I really feel bad for her. So
right.
Then I asked my 2 kids, we're talking about it, and hey, this is what happened on the news. What's your opinion of it? And Ethan is a almost 21-year-old man, says that, you know, again, he's showing empathy and sympathy for the female. You know, it's unfortunate that she had to deal with that, and, you know, that's not very kind. And it's kind of the same things Nate was saying, that it's just unfortunate that she had to go through that. And Lorelai was like, yeah, And I said, what do you mean, huh? And she goes, well, yeah, it's unfortunate that it happened to her, but it wasn't real, was it? And I was like, well, what do you mean? And she was kind of hesitating, and I said, no, go speak freely. And she said, just turn it off.
Exactly.
And I said, you know what? That's my opinion, too. And both her and Ethan looked up, and I said, you know, I love where your head's at, Ethan, just as a male of that pure empathy right off the bat. You're such right. a good person, right? But I love that Lorelai could look at it and be like, just turn it off.
Exactly. How it many wasn't
other,
real.
Yeah, how many other women who have really been cornered in a back alley by a dumpster had the opportunity to just turn it off? I don't care right. if there's not a safety button, lady. You could unplug it.
Yes, you could turn it off. Take the headset off and just, you know, turn it off. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. You know, I mean, it shouldn't have happened. I get that. But at the same time, it is not newsworthy.
Right. I agree.
You know,
I agree.
Turn it off. You know, because I'm just, again, it's just getting ridiculous.
And I think this that you could see that same thing in the broadcaster's face of the video.
Yes.
This feels like a stretch.
Yes.
So we'll jump from that to my question of the day. And if anybody wants to see that news article or news clip, send Tavi and I a message because we have it saved in our phones.
Yes.
I couldn't figure out how to text it to somebody because it was too long. So we'll see what
Facebook
we can do. Either way.
How did I send it to you?
Well, I think because we're Apple to Apple.
Oh, okay.
So this is my question. Do you think a spouse should tell you before they take an erectile dysfunction medicine? And I'm saying for fun. I'm not saying that your man is now there and this is a daily expectation or however men take it, that you've ordered a Viagra or something. You know, I don't know if most people know, but back in the day, Viagra had a patent on it. So you could only get Viagra if it was prescribed. I don't know if people know as well that a man taking a Viagra, even if they don't need it, could be a good time because they are
rock solid hard, baby.
For hours, right? So it could be a good time. So we have been on that side of let's do this for fun.
Okay.
Now that the patent's over, you can buy it anywhere. So, fan of Blue Chew, we're going to shout out Blue Chew here.
Woo!
You can go online, you can get a free prescription. It's very simple.
Okay.
Now, your man has this Blue Chew at home. Does he, A, tell you beforehand, hey, locked and loaded tonight, be ready, brace yourself. Or does he not tell you?
Well, my man's going to tell me, and here's why. Because if he comes in locked and loaded and I'm not prepared, when I come and I'm done, even if he's not, no, y'all, I'm done. Sorry, there was not prior notice.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, don't come at me with that extremely hard dick expecting me to fuck you for 4 hours after I've had a long ass day. That shit's just not gonna happen. Look. You want that to happen, you should have came to me in my 20s. I'd fuck you for 8 hours. I'd fuck the Viagra right out of you.
And on
most nights I might, but
I agree. I think that it needs to be something of like, hey, Blue Chewing it tonight. Like sock on the door kind of thing. Because there is a mental expectation of, okay, this is going to last 15 to 20 minutes. And that I need to put in this amount of work for 15 to 20 minutes. This is what my man likes, and this is what we're going to get there. Instead, 15, and you also know you better get yours, because if he gets yours beforehand, you're done. So you better get yours. But this is what happened to us the other night.
Okay. Oh, geez. Sabrina's reading an article.
I really was. At one point, I looked at him so sweaty, so out of breath, and just going to town. I had already gotten off twice.
Okay.
Right? And then I looked, and I was like, did you take a Blue Chew? And he was like, yes. Yes, and I was like, Jesus Christ, you should have told me.
Right?
I would have paced myself. And also, what if I wasn't committed to another 30 minutes?
Right?
I think that's being a selfish lover. I think step one.
I think it's something you need to talk about. Like, truly, truly, it is something that has to be talked about. I mean, because it's just not fair to one partner or the other. Because especially if he's expecting to go that long, he's going to be disappointed. You're going to be pissed off. And it's like, just have some open communication. Because look, if you were at the age that you were buying Blue Chew pills, you're at the age you should be having open communication with your partner.
Right? You should be able to talk about it.
I'm just saying. 20-year-olds aren't buying the pill.
Yeah, he's well, we were doing it in our 20s for fun, too. But, again, just because of what happens when you're on it, it's a good time. But there have been plenty of times where he's told me the next morning when he's woken up with a lifesaver in his pants, oh, yeah, I took a Blue Chew last night, but you went to bed. Well, you didn't tell me.
Yeah, and then he just wakes up hard.
Right, that's on you.
I mean, more so than he normally does, right?
Right. Right. Oh. So, let me just say, I think that when this is coming up, we are going to be coming up to mine and Nate's, I think it's our 13th wedding anniversary, maybe 14th wedding anniversary. 14th.
Uh-huh.
And 18 years nice. Together. So,
woo!
Next month. Yeah, sometime next month. We're not big anniversary people. So, right. We won't be going out to dinner. We don't go to it, like the place we first met. That's just, we're not those kind of people. I know
right.
some people love anniversaries and celebrations, but I don't even know what week we met. I know it's after St. Patty's Day because we're trying to keep count of like what party we were at when we met.
Uh-huh.
So, 18 years into this, what made me think about this the other day is on Real Housewives of Orange County, because you know
yep.
I watch this trash TV. There is a doctor, Dr. Jen, and her husband, Ryan. And Dr. Jen, obviously, is the doctor.
Yeah.
And then Ryan is the stay-at-home husband. And he walked out on her the other night. They got into an argument, and he left. And she had to film the next day. And so then she was talking to mostly married women about mm-hmm. the fact that her husband got into an argument. They had walked. He had left for the first time. Now, he did come back, and she just said that she was humiliated, and she didn't know what to do. And the parts that I found interesting was listening to married women give a married woman advice.
Okay, what kind of advice did they give?
It was more of their experiences and the things that they've experienced, that this was normal, first of all, was this argument of any means. Like, I know the fact that you're not going to like is that he left.
Right.
But what she was saying, or what most of them were saying, is that, and most of them had been married for decades of some sort, of, you know, over 10 years or more, that these ebbs and flows in relationships are there. And even if, like Heather Dubrow was saying, that even if she has 5 terrible years with her husband, she's had 15 beautiful years.
Right, that makes sense.
And then you just have to take those ebbs and flows and really keep working at it and keep looking at it. Where then there was a 20-year-old new castmate who's only been married for 2 years and is already filed for divorce that said something like, well, I hope you got a good divorce attorney, or you better be careful. And everybody kind of gave her a dirty look of like, why are you even going there?
Right. Well, she doesn't know anything better. She,
right.
That's her experience, right? It was, there was a fight and they left.
Mm-hmm.
So she's only associating that with her experience and such a little amount of time of being married.
Right. Right.
You know, because like you and I have had conversations before that when you get to a certain age and a certain point in your relationship and marriage, you just know the other person's not leaving. They're not going anywhere. You're fighting, but they're not going anywhere.
Right.
I don't like the fact that he left the house. They obviously, they have money. Go to another fucking room. right? I understand the distance. I totally get that. I understand needing that distance. Get the fuck away from me. We're having a fight. I'm not in the mood. Da 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 da. Right? I get that. But don't leave the house.
Right.
And my only personal reason for leaving the house is, God forbid you get in a car accident. God forbid something happens and we're fighting. You stay home, go into another room, and we'll finish this fucking fight. Right? But there's no need to leave the house.
Yeah, and something happens, and that's the last experience you have with somebody.
Exactly. And I'm not all about that, because I'd be calling, like, you just need to come home. Because I'd be beside myself. You know?
I watched The Real Housewives of Orange County, and then I always listen to Heather Dubrow's World, which is a podcast on Apple, where her and then two of her friends kind of digest the podcast or the episode afterwards. And they were talking a lot about, you know, the fact that the argument that they're having is that one person feels overworked, right? This doctor, who is also a mother, but feels so disconnected from her children. And then you have this male figure that was once a very bright and charming and masculine man who now has been raising kids at home for the last 15 years, and how resentful he is of maybe her progress, and he feels little while she feels big. And she doesn't feel heard while he doesn't feel appreciated. And so it's interesting to watch these things where we have all probably felt like that in our marriage at some point, right? And again, to listen to women give good advice.
Right. And, you know, that happens in any relationship where one person stays home and raises the kid, whether it's a guy or a girl. They both feel like my partner is moving forward in their lives and they have all this amazing career and all of that sort of stuff. And I just stay at home. There's nobody understands that. But, you know, the one thing I heard one time was, you don't get to diminish a stay-at-home mom or husband, okay? Because that is their work. That is their domain. They are the CEO of the house. Mm-hmm. So you come home and you don't get to question. You get your input, right? But he or she does not come to your job and tell you how to fucking run it.
Right.
And you have that same respect when it's your relationship and it's the house. So if he's at home, she needs to be saying, thank you for making me dinner, thank you for taking care of this, and da 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 da, right? Because that's his fucking job. His job is raising those kids, providing the food, making sure dinners are ready, laundry's done, house is clean, right? Like, that's a lot of fucking work. And as a woman, she should be kind of familiar with that. That knowing that's a lot of work, because even in her single days, she was doing a lot of that. But she doesn't get to downgrade him for that either. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys made this decision that he was going to take on more of the domestic household role. You don't get to diminish him for it.
Right. And I also think that something that she did wrong, and if anybody else watched it, I'd be interested if they had that same feeling, is that she is having this conversation with him, but just digging into him. And you can almost see him go blank, where she's now talking about her feelings and saying, you know, you don't hear me and I need you to say these things. And at one point he does regurgitate exactly what he says. Like, I hear that you feel like such and such, and I feel, but you can feel the disconnection in it. Right. And in the podcast I listened to afterwards, this guy Jefferson said a good thing. It was like, you can ask your partner to hear you, but you can't ask them to understand your feelings.
No, especially if you're not being communicative, because it doesn't sound like he's saying to her,
well, also,
I don't feel appreciated.
Yeah, they also just might never get it. And that's okay, too, where it's okay to be like, okay, you know, if you can hear me, but making a man or a woman just repeat it of what I hear, what you need me to be, is more communicative or communicative in my... What if he just says, I can't be that person for you?
Right, because what is she wanting? I mean, She's right. wanting more of the masculine man and the man who goes out and brings home the bacon. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not how you set up your relationship.
Right.
You don't get to judge him for that. Yes, he's still going to be masculine in different ways, protecting the kids, protecting you. But on a day-to-day basis, look, and I don't want to put in sign gender roles, but he's doing a lot of the female role, taking care of the kid. You know? So, yeah, his masculinity is going down. He's dealing with all the same stuff that stay-at-home moms deal with. The parents at school and the bickering and the gossip and all of that other stuff. And he's not doing his male roles.
Right.
So you can't expect him to be this huge masculine guy and all he does is have tea parties with little girls.
Yeah, and I think some of it kind of resonates a little bit with me of... So a couple weekends ago, I went to a hockey tournament with my husband and daughter.
Uh-huh.
And my husband on the court or on the rink is a different man. He's played hockey his whole life. He's very aggressive when he plays. You know, he took a punch in the chest because he was being an asshole to somebody and annoying somebody. But then if you meet him off of the rink or off of the court, he's very quiet. He's very reserved. And so then even myself, I've tried to struggle with, again, like I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, of I need you to talk more. It doesn't have to be of anything, of any great length. Tell me something of just, let's dig into something. I could push that until he can't take it anymore, or I can learn how to adapt to it, right? And learn, like, you might not be this super talkative person, but let's find a way that works for the two of us.
Exactly. And you found that way, right? Like with the, you know, the game that he didn't know he was playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and, but also Nate also has hockey, which is his male aggression. He has a way to get out his male aggression. When he's on that rink, he's a fucking man. He's a man's man. He's competing. He's doing everything that he knows biologically to do, right? So he has that outlet. In this other couple's situation, I don't know, but it doesn't sound like he has that outlet. So if he can't be a man's man and do those things, how are you expecting him to treat you that way?
Right. You know? And it, funny enough, I ended up with a different outlook of it or respect for him because these parents that he has coached their kids, again, even as a coach, Nate was very reserved and only every once in a while does he scream and yell.
Right.
But typically he's a very quiet and reserved man, which he gets from his father. It's very brigance of him to be very quiet and reserved. To watch these men, these parental men of these get this new respect and understanding for my husband, to watch him play and then to see that he doesn't have to carry that same aggression and just balls to the walls offside. He's not an asshole outside of the court. He's just a gentleman. It just, it touched me to be like, what a beautiful combination of a man you are.
Exactly. And that's what real men are supposed to be. They're supposed to be aggressive when they have to be. I have learned from a lot of men is that your quiet men are quiet for a reason. Because he doesn't speak until something really has to be said. And when Nate speaks, people fucking listen.
Right.
Right? Because he's so quiet. Because you're quiet, you're quiet, you're quiet. And Nate gets up and says, enough. That whole house shuts down.
Right.
Right? And that's what he's doing. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing. He's being a great father. He's being a great man and a great husband.
It's funny. It reminds me of a quote, and you're going to laugh at me because it's like a Real Housewife. But Erica Girardi on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, one day somebody said to her, you don't talk enough. And she said, when I talk about real shit. When you talk about bullshit. So nobody listens to you. So that reminds me of that.
Yeah, and it's very true.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's funny that it's something that what I realized that weekend was it was something that I have fought against rather mm-hmm. than just respecting him for. 18 years into it, that it was like, I get it. I get it. And what a beautiful man you've become and you've grown into. And I get to claim you as mine. And how great that felt. It was yeah. nice. So back off, ladies.
Ooh!
All right.
I've got 40 acres and a backhoe, y'all. That's all right. I'm saying.
We'll throw those bitches off the same cliff that the goat almost went over.
Right? Damn blue.
Now, here's my last question for you before we wrap okay. it up. Is this is in regards to teenage girls and your okay. relationship with your mothers.
Okay.
So I will share on mine first. And the reason this comes up is everybody knows that I have a son. Everybody knows, you know, he's almost 21. And then I have a preteen daughter quickly coming up behind.
Is she 12? How old is she now?
She's 11 and a half.
Okay.
So, she hates me, Tabby. She fucking hates me. She's so mean.
Yeah, she does. Oh, yeah, she does.
Is this
look? Yes. Yes. And let me just put it this way. I hope you enjoyed your good years with Ethan. Okay? Because, oh my God, girls are horrible. Girls hate their mothers. Girls blame their mothers. They are the worst. And it's not going away anytime soon. So, I can tell you that girls just hate their mothers for a long time. They blame their mothers.
What Krista told me was like, period, all yes. the way up through high school, and then outside of high school, mothers and daughters then are able to rebond and become best friends. And
sometimes.
Fingers yeah. crossed.
So I'm going to be really honest with you. My relationship with my moms were, each one had their own struggles, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't really start getting close with my mothers on a more of an adult level until mid-20s, almost 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the reason why, and this is one of the things that one of my mothers had a really, really hard time with, okay, is that once you become an adult, right, that doesn't just mean 18, okay, because you turn 18 doesn't mean you're an adult. Until you really become an adult, that mother has to really start accepting you as an adult and have more of an adult-to-adult relationship instead of a parent-child relationship. And that is a very, very struggled thing, especially when you're considering you had 4, 8, almost 10 years mm-hmm. of struggle, right? You and Lorelai, and look, I hate to say it, honey, but for at least the next 10 years, you and Lorelai are going to butt heads right. like fucking crazy, okay? It's crazy. The hormones kick in. Sometimes it's her fault. Sometimes it's not. Like, the hormones make her do shit. She doesn't know how to handle it, you know? I'm sure you remember being young and having those urges and those feelings and unexplainable things. And, you know, you and I talked about this a couple years ago on the podcast, and I'm like, there is something correlate directly with girls. From the time that they're born up till their periods, they're a fucking badass. They're going to achieve the world. They're like, woo, I got this, da-da-da. Period hits, and it's like the bitch gets turned on. And it's full force, right? And very much like you and Ethan had this symbiotic relationship mm-hmm. while Ethan and Nate fought, right?
Mm-hmm.
You and Lorelai are going to fight, and Lorelai is going to have the better relationship with Nate during these years.
Right.
You know, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to be frustrating, but it's going to come out in mm-hmm. the end, you know?
And I think it also happens a little bit later for boys, where mm-hmm. with Ethan, it was difficult during his high school years. Like, they go through that douchey kind of period where their egos are high, they can't do any wrong, they just have been able to drive, they get all these things where I really couldn't stand them there for a while.
Right.
And kind of like a cocoon and butterfly, right? They start to come out as this, like, oh, he's a young man, like, and he is a great young man, and that we're proud of him.
Yeah. But
Jesus, there were like those 3 or 4 years where I'm like, ugh, he was terrible. And the best time being his middle school year. So naively, I went into middle school thinking that this is the year that Lorelai and I are going to be really great. She's going to be really into clothes and all this. Nope.
Oh, she. Well, she is. Just not with
my
you.
Clothes. Yeah. Not at all.
She doesn't want your clothes. She doesn't want your makeup. She doesn't want your style. She wants nothing to be like you. And the reason why is because she is trying to create her own woman. She's trying to create her own person. And anything you say, anything you suggest, she's going to tell you no. She's going to tell you you're wrong. You go out there and you tell her the sky is blue, she's going to be like, you're fucking lying to me. It's purple. And she's going to start a fight. Like, and that's just how we are. Like, you hate your mothers until your 20s. And then I have heard that once a daughter has a child, that bond between her and her mother gets even tighter.
That would make sense, yeah. Because there's a need there for,
right,
you know, like, again, for some maternal assistance.
Right, because
there.
She's scared and she's going, oh my God, Mom, how do I be a mom?
Right.
And then she's going to turn to you, you know. Mm-hmm. She's not going to turn to Nate. But right now, no, you're the enemy. It's sad.
It's terrible.
I know.
I don't think I had to deal with it because I didn't grow up with my mom. So
right.
I only got to see my mom every other weekend, and that wasn't even consistent. So I didn't, whenever I saw her, I was excited to see her.
Right. And then with your dad, look, in the end, when your dad said something, you automatically submitted and followed his rules until you decided to go out and break it again because you were doing something wild and crazy. Anyways, but you still respected your dad more at that point in your life, right?
Right.
You're going to notice, you're going to say something to her, and Nate's going to say something to her, and it can be the exact same thing. You're going to catch shit, and he's not.
Yeah, and I've been trying to be more sensitive, you know, like you said, of like, because I understand there's a lot of things she doesn't have control over right now, right? Like, there's a lot of things going on inside of her,
mm-hmm.
especially with the start of a cycle where, unlike I think our parents were kind of oblivious to it, or they just didn't care, right? Kids were supposed to do what kids were told to do. That
right.
I try to be mindful of, okay, listen, it's her time of the month. She's going to be a little extra grouchy. She's going to be a little extra sensitive. And for me not to push it.
Right.
Because I know the way I am when I am during that time.
Yeah.
That it's also, you know, so I am trying to be more self-aware. But then there's also this point of where I just want to smack the shit out of her sometimes. Jesus Christ.
She'll look at you and all you want to do is smack her.
Now I know. I had a friend, Erin, that would show up to the bus stop in middle school and high school, and her mother was always slapping her in the morning. And now I get it, because I guarantee Erin was rolling her eyes at
uh-huh.
poor Mama, and Mama would just backslap her.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Erin's mom on that one. Like, that's an urge. Like, you don't want, like, you just can't control. It's like, because you know she's being disrespectful.
Right.
You know,
it's a lot.
Whatever the reason is, in the end, she's still being disrespectful. And, you know, I think, and, you know, I've never raised a girl. I've only raised a boy for a couple of years. So I'm not the best parent. But I think sitting her down and saying, hey, these are the actions that you're doing. You may not be aware, but this is what you're doing, and this is how it's making me feel.
Right.
And if you continue to do this, this is going to be the consequence. Maybe that might help. Like, having that open communication, right? Because I've had a conversation with someone one time, and I'm like, look, I understand your hormones are raging, but cut the shit out. And they went, okay. And then they were fine. like, it was bringing awareness to it.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah, that might help. I will say probably not at this point. I think, right. You know, again, just we will continue to openly speak, but Jesus,
oh, yeah.
It's, I think we're just in the beginning of it, and it's for years to come. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know what the time is for slapping your kids in the face, but I might be doing some jail time here in the future.
Look, there is no jail time for slapping your kid in the face who deserved it.
Right.
I got slapped in the face.
Yeah, but girl, we grew up in the 80s and 90s. I don't know what the rules are now.
Look, here's what my mom did, okay? My sister used to do the whole, you can't touch me or hit me, it's abuse, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. So my dumbass sister called DCF on my mother for a spanking, okay? And she was in middle school. So DCF comes in. D had to go down to DCF. That's not when DCF used to come into the houses. So took her down to DCF, had this whole conversation. D said, here she is. They're like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, if I can't parent my child to give a spanking when one is needed so she doesn't become a shitty human being, here's her shit. You raise her. She's like, I'm fucking done. D was walking out the door. Like, left her there with a suitcase. They're like, oh, whoa, no, 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 wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. She's like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Oh, well, they totally changed their tune. They're like, yep, nope.
Right.
Right, because she was in a good home. She was being taken care of. She was meeting all the, you know, way beyond DCF's requirements. But it was like, don't fucking come in here and tell me how to raise my kid unless you want to raise her. Because I'll give her to you and I'll go on about my business.
Right, yeah. Difference between abuse and discipline.
Exactly.
And as parents, we should have the right to discipline our children. Correct. And also call them out on their bullshit. You want to go? You want to run away? Here, I'll drive you.
Well, no, you want to run away? That's great. You can take everything that you own. Wait. You don't own shit.
I know. Such a great
And
deal.
Strip her naked, push her out the front door, and go, have at it.
I know somebody who did that. It was a great story. And the kid was, like, in his boxers, squished between the front door and the sliding glass door, trying to hide. And the mom looked at the son or husband and was like, pick a side. Do not open that door. He wanted to run away. He can run away with what he has on his back, which is just his boxer shorts.
Yep.
That same mom also did what your mother did and drove him downtown to CPS or whatever it's called here in Jacksonville and was like, here you go. You want to go? Go.
Yep. Have fun at it. Go on.
If I knew what I knew now, I'd stay at home as long as I could.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's take this home. We are all done for the app. For episode number two.
Yay!
All right, you gonna say our goodbyes?
I am. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please send us an email at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, like us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And I hope you guys have a wonderful evening.
Goodbye.
Bye, guys.